Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 170. We're back to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 4, episode 3, The Harsh Light of Day, followed by Angel, season 1, episode 3, In the Dark. And as maybe the related titles can tell you, these two episodes were also very related, so make sure you've seen both before you tune into the show. My name is Selena, and I'm joined by newbies, both of my fellow hosts today, Brittany and Mitch. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Spike-centric week, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is a spike-centric week. Yes, it
nothing
is.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
No. Very much nothing wrong with that. So, we'll get into talking about Spike and all of his friends later. But before we do that, we just want to remind you of the contact information. If you want to send us your spoiler-free thoughts, because, of course, this is a spoiler-free podcast, you can do that by emailing rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. All right. So before we start talking about Spike, let's talk about ourselves in fun facts to help you guys distinguish our voices. Mitch, why don't you go first today?
I know you two are really going to appreciate this one. I just finished the Gilmore Girls season 7 finale for the first time. I went through the whole season, all the seasons, and I'm excited for November now. I think it's November.
I'm rewatching it on hype, so I'm only on season 3, so.
No, yeah, I won't say any spoilers. I wouldn't even if you weren't on, because I want anyone else to experience this beautiful series for their own. It's such a heartbreaking, lovely story. I really love Gilmore Girls. It's just, I can't get over the fact that I finally have found, like, my pop culture character, like, someone that is me. And if only I drank coffee, I feel like I would be Lorelai to the T, because it's insane how, like, tangential and fast-talking her and I can both be. And I find that to be fun, because I think she's a pretty princess, and I would love to be considered such.
That's awesome. Now, I would say that you should do a rewatchable for Gilmore Girls, but it might be sad for you if everyone turns out to hate it, so you would probably have to think about that twice.
Take Gilmore Guys' thunder, because they're already doing a very good podcast.
That's true. That I highly recommend. There can be more than one. There's more than one Buffy rewatch podcasts out there.
I'm sure, definitely. But I feel like they've really, like, monopolized the Gilmore Girls podcast.
Yeah.
So, like, you probably just rehashing the same stuff as them, and I'd be like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm actually, because I'm kind of listening to it, too, because I'm watching it for the first time, and I'm listening to it kind of as I go, but I had to stop in some episodes, because they get some hosts in.
They don't care about spoilers.
Yeah, they don't care about spoilers, and they're so mean, and I'm just like, it really depresses me to listen to it. So
I agree. Like, sometimes they'll have, like, a guest host on that is just so intense about a point that doesn't matter, and little things. They'll be like, I can't stand Lorelai's scarf in this episode. It distracted me. I could not pay attention to any of the dialogue. And they'll harp on it for like a half an hour. And then the podcast went up being like 3.5 hours sometimes. It blows my mind that they can sit there and talk about Gilmore Girls for nearly 4 hours. I don't even know what they're talking about half the time.
No. And when you really love something, you know, it's probably hard to listen to that. So whatever. Gilmore Girls, awesome. I'm glad that you're all ready for
seasons.
Yeah, I hope to be caught up by that time.
And our Gilmore Girls, like, enthusiast over here, she's known from way back when how the show currently ended. So,
well, I watched it live.
I feel like I'm in my place talking to you two about this.
I love Gilmore Girls. I finished it. Well, I watched it when it was on air.
What's your fun fact, Brittany?
Mine is that I learned the hard way that you have to watch these episodes in alternating order, because I watched Angel first and I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. I guess that's kind of the whole point of us doing it this way, with one episode a week of each, because I would say, like, we kind of talked about this before we started doing it, and I would argue that it still makes sense to go two and two, because there's more crossover from, like, within the shows than across the shows. But for episodes like this, that was very unfortunate.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, I have two episodes to catch up on, and then it auto-plays. So I was like, okay, I'll just start here. And then I'm like, wait, why is Spike here? I don't know what's going on.
The Netflix ones are so spoilery as well. Like, I hate that. Every time I go on watching, because I watch it on Netflix too, and I'm just like, oh, if I was a newbie, I would just hate being spoiled on that. So, okay, well, Now you know.
Yeah.
My fun fact is that I've been, because we're going to Comic-Con obviously next week, and one of the things I'm doing there is I'm hopefully going to be interviewing the Wynonna Earp people. So to prepare myself for that, I watched a few episodes ages ago, but now I've marathoned the whole show. It is so good. And listeners of this podcast, I highly recommend checking it out. It's basically Cowboy Buffy meets Supernatural. So you guys, maybe you won't like it. I don't know. But definitely super fans of Buffy will like it, which I am one. So I've just been loving it so much.
What's it called?
Wynonna Earp. I can spell it out.
Oh, is it like a sci-fi show? Am I making that up?
Yeah, no, it's like a demon hunter show. She's this.
Yeah,
this
girl. On Sci-Fi Network, right?
Right. Yeah, it's a Sci-Fi Network show. Yeah,
she's a demon hunter. That's kind of like chip on her shoulder. Yeah, Supernatural.
She's a cowboy
stuff.
Type of person. It's so good. Like, I'm so into it. And now the season just ended on a cliffhanger, and I'm like, I need more. So I have lots to get into at Comic-Con, which is going to be fun.
You are so into it.
I am.
I am so into you.
Yes. But anyway, so we should probably start talking about Buffy because we have a couple of pretty good episodes to get through. I definitely enjoy both of these. Definitely Spike is a big part of that, but I enjoy a lot of it, actually. To start us off, let me read the synopsis written by Ariana, I believe. Which says in
yes,
this episode
the yeah. this week. And I can't okay, wait. Good. I love the surprise. Here we go.
In this episode, Parker's intense eye contact is a sure sign that he's bad, bad news. And true enough, after he and Buffy boink, he's ready to bounce. Meanwhile, Harmony's a vamp now and dating Spike, who kind of hates her. He looks for and finds his precious one ring, but filled with fury, Buffy takes it from him and ships it off to her former flame. Also, Anya shows up in Sander's basement looking to get rid of her human feelings, but finding herself falling hard. They also boink. There is so much boinking to be had. There you go. That's the episode. That's pretty much sums it up.
There's a good amount of boinking in the show in general.
Well,
like, you just
really...
throw suitable people in a room together and they're like, well, let's do it, like Giles and Joyce. I'm still not over that one. It's just
well, that
it's
was
like
good.
God, everyone's and, just horny yeah. on this show. Get them in a room alone and like Xander and Willow just making out like that. It just feels like everyone has what's the trope that's like they use it in Supernatural, I think. They insert like a gas into the room and it makes people want to have sex. It's like a hormone, or something. You know what I'm talking about, Selena? You're a Supernatural fan, I think.
Sure, but I don't remember that happening. But you know, to be honest, like looking back, like fact checking here, who has actually had sex on the show? Buffy and Angel, Sander yeah. and Faith, Buffy, not, yeah. Oz and Cordelia. No, who?
Oz
and
Cordelia.
Willow. Not Oz and Cordelia. Yeah, that's many. Season 7, guys. No.
There you go.
No, who else? Awesome. Giles has had sex with most people. Everyone else just had sex with one person. Giles is the real go-getter of the group. So I think they're okay. I don't think there's an abundance of sex happening right now.
So
but I guess
thing, like,
Buffy's catching up.
Hmm? I'm conflicted about Parker because we have like super fans talking about how he's important. And I'm like, why? Is it just because he affects Buffy later on? Like, she'll think back to this and be like, God, men are douche. Is she going to see him again? Like, is he going to be, like, another vampire hunter or something crazy? I don't see the point of him yet. So I don't know if I'm maybe missing the plot here, but it feels like he's pretty insignificant at this point.
Well, I think his significance comes in this encounter that she has with him now. You know, like this, what happened, obviously, jumping ahead a little bit, what happened in this episode, they sleep together. It's like this awesome, sparky, normal relationship that she's having after all this mess with Angel. She's in college. She meets this cute guy. She acts on her instincts. And what happens? Boom. You know, she gets this gut-wrenching rejection. And it's so human. And it's so, like, you can't protect yourself from it. You can't slay your way out of it. Like, there's just so much. I feel like Buffy's always at her weakest when she's dealing with human things that she can't fight her way out of, and I just think that's one of them, and I think it really sort of crushes her, and I think that's, at least to this point, that's kind of what matters about that storyline. I remember when I was younger, I got so confused watching this before I really knew English. I couldn't really tell the difference between this guy and Xander. And like watching it now, obviously they look super different. But at that point, it's just something about the eyebrows and the hair. You thought that she was boinking Xander,
finally.
No, I was just like, why do they look so similar? What's going on?
Or maybe that's like part of the plot.
Maybe. There's, you know, like an army of Xanders out there.
Probably was like, oh, they're doppelgangers or something.
No, I don't know.
They have a really similar hairstyle. It's kind of like that floppy bang thing that some like 90s boys had. Yeah, I see what you're talking about.
I think I just got confused. Like, I couldn't tell like who, when it was when. And so
you're probably young watching the show back then, so it's tough because like I don't know. It's, there's like I think you wouldn't be able to understand at a certain age on a show like Buffy, characters coming in and out like this that do, yeah, arguably look a lot like each other, maybe that's on purpose. It'd be hard to understand the differences in like small character bits, I think, for like a younger kid to watch the show.
Yeah. But I mean, sort of speaking of Parker a little bit, and then we can get back to Harmony and Spike. But what did you guys feel about the Parker storyline? Did you kind of see it go in the direction it went in? Like, did you see that he would turn out to be such a douche, or were you kind of expecting this relationship to develop differently?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that it wouldn't last, so I was glad in the way that it turned out, only because I think Buffy needs time alone and she should not, like, you know, have to deal with romance right now. I'd like to get to know Buffy outside of that a little bit more as she's learning, like, you know, to live apart from Angel, and she's not just throwing herself into another relationship. I'd like Buffy to, like, you know, do something a little bit different. And I was so happy he did not turn out to be like a demon or something. That just, it made my day. I was like, thank goodness. I don't know if I could have dealt with, like, you know, him pulling a Doyle and like sneezing and like something happening, or like him walking down the street and like disappearing in a reflection. I just would have, I think that would have pushed me over the edge. So I was like, thank goodness this is like a real human thing. And even like, you know, you want to be normal, Buffy, here's your, like, you know, little touch with normality. Like, it's not even easier than being the Slayer. So
yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I do appreciate that as well. I mean, Parker is the worst, but at least, you know, it does add a human element that I think is always really nice when we get that on Buffy.
Yeah, plus I feel like it's going to make her a little bit more cautious. Like, she's not going to be now being like, oh, we went out, we talked, like, you know, two or three times, this is forever. Like, I think that's a good thing to get out of her head at this point, is that not everything is forever.
Yeah. And that's such a good point, too, because I think after Angel, which was this sort of epitome of like eternal love and melodrama and big emotion and undying devotion and what have you, like, this is the exact opposite. And it's kind of like a bucket of cold water being thrown in her face. Like, this is what life is actually like.
Fuckboys do exist, and they will take advantage of you, Buffy.
Exactly, exactly.
And he's such a fuckboy. The way he's talking to the other girl, and he's just like, he was just like, I had fun. And he was basically implying, but I want to fuck other people too. Mm-hmm. It was so ridiculous. I was looking at him like, you don't see that you're breaking the heart of this girl right now. You don't see that she cares so much for you. But that's a lot. That's a lot of what college-aged guys will do.
Oh,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm
it's
sure
like
that
a
happens
sport to them, you know.
I'm
like,
sure that happens with women to men as well. I'm sure it's just a college age thing. I wouldn't know from personal experience, but it just feels sad to see like culture always lead to that. And I wish Buffy better. I hope she finds a better lover, and perhaps the return of our favorite other little comatose Slayer. That'd be nice.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Down as badly, I hope not. I don't know. She's pretty psychotic, so probably.
Yeah.
Ever.
You know, I like how the show handles it too, because I think there was a line from Willow at one point when she, you know, Buffy was like, you know, I'm having all these lusty wrong feelings, and Willow sort of made a point to say, no, but they're not actually wrong. Like, this is what you're supposed to be. You can go, like, be with whoever you want. And now she's sort of figuring out that, you know, the problem isn't her, the problem is him. And she sort of has to struggle with that in a very real way that I think we've sort of all been there, or, you know, we can empathize at least.
That seems like a very progressive thought for Buffy to have, because that doesn't seem like something that would be allowed on most television in the 90s, something as promiscuous as that.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of like there's a lot of debate, obviously, about how Buffy handles romance and sexuality and all of that. And I think they do sort of make a point here to I think this is a good thing. You know, there's obviously things we'll get into later, but I feel like this is sort of a very good move for them. And I find that that happens a lot, actually, also with Willow and the way that she's, you know, choosing to go ahead with Oz and stuff like that. And I think and having the bad sexual experience, well, Buffy and Angel, I guess that counted too, but have that be for Xander with Faith, and there's some role reversal going on there. But no, I think...
I meant to say Fuffy, not Cuffy.
Oh, did you say Cuffy? Oh, yeah.
I said Cuffy, not Fuffy.
Yeah. I can... It's
strange. Like, this show has such an issue with trying to give Buffy a happy. It's... But it's to the point where it's almost, it feels like abusive toward the character that she can't even have like a normal sexual relationship with a man, because as soon as she tries, yeah. It just comes right. To bite her in the ass, and he either loses his soul and murders her teacher and tortures her, or ends up like being a stupid fuckboy. When has she had a good romantic experience with a man? Like, remember that creepy guy that gave her the Clot ring like day one? That
was oh yeah.
Just to have like normal people that like her, and I don't know why. Wow. Maybe it's because she's so tough and strong that everyone else that would be like good for her is intimidated by her, so only like these jockey types will come up to her.
Well, I mean, it goes to the tagline of the show: men are evil. So there you go. No, I'm just kidding.
Apparently,
not all. Giles is not evil. So we're okay. But no, I do think I just want to say one more point about this is that I feel like that's kind of one of the things I love about season four that I know not everybody does, but it kind of taps into some really real things about the college experience. You know, the first episode of the season, I've talked about that before. It's one of my favorites because I always, whenever I go to a new place and I feel alone and I feel like afraid and I don't want to talk to anyone and I think I'm going to be like alone in this place forever with no friends, and I always get out that episode of Buffy and I put it on and I watch her be all alone. Even though she's the Slayer and she's this awesome person, she can still feel like I've felt, and I feel like this is another example of that, and I just, to me, that has been really important to me. So
as a newbie, I'm really enjoying, like, Britt, are you with me that this show has improved tenfold, like scene one, act one of season four?
I'm not really sure. I definitely am enjoying watching season four a little bit more than I was toward the end of season three, and I didn't think that that was going to be true because I really did like season two of Buffy, and then it sort of went down a little bit in season three for me as a viewer, and then I knew that Angel was coming and I was frustrated with Angel, so I think I was going into season four already like flustered and like, oh my gosh, this is going to take forever. But it's has been a really easy viewing experience, which is nice. It's not like a chore where I feel like, oh, I have to sit down and watch Buffy. I'm not getting that feeling at all, which is surprising.
It's stepping out of the box a lot, and it's stepping out of the high school. I mean, we've had a lot more, like, just speaking about something as cinematography, you know, we're stepping outside. You know, we have a lot more outdoor scenes. We have a lot more sort of movement in town. And I feel like it's a lot. The production value went up. I think you guys talked about that in the previous episode, how everything looks better. And the aspect ratio, which drives me wild.
Yeah. I can't believe that Angel can have the widescreen aspect ratio and this still just has the standard. And it's not because I don't think of the way it was aired. I feel like Buffy at this season had to have been aired widescreen. I wanted to ask superfans this. Do you remember, like, do you have DVDs where is it higher quality than this Netflix upload? Because, like, these copies of Buffy are very low quality. It is sometimes difficult to understand what's going on screen when they have a wide shot because you can't see anything but big blobs and faces aren't really clear. It's sad.
Yeah, I've read up on this before, actually. I'm pretty sure they did crop for Netflix. In a weird way, like you can see on some of the close-up shots that it looks a little bit strange. But I feel like they just, you know, there was a widescreen. We don't have to get into all this. I'm sorry, I'm wasting time. But there was a widescreen.
We're talking about production value, and this is something that I feel like is important as a viewer because now that we're watching Angel, I compare the two, and Angel looks beautiful. It's a very well-shot show. I think it is gorgeous. I like the noir feel of it. Buffy feels like it's still stuck in season one. In terms of its cameras, in that terms of its production value, and that makes me sad.
Well, they did. I feel like they, because that's why I'm just reading up on it now, that there was a widescreen Buffy released a while back, and that sort of revealed like all of the crew members and stuff up on the side. So I feel like for Netflix, because I'm looking at some of these comparisons, like the shots definitely are wider than they are on Netflix, because on Netflix they're basically square. So I feel like maybe they just took the widescreen versions and cropped them, and that's what sucks,
because that means you're definitely
theorizing, but yeah, I don't know. It looks weird, but we'll have to see. I feel like it changes later.
There's
seasons. Two
issues. There's a cropping, and then there's quality issue as well.
Yeah, it's really grainy.
It's almost like they cropped and zoomed in.
Yeah, really weird. Exactly. That is what it looks like. But we'll have to investigate that further.
It makes me want to get like a. I wonder if any fans can write into us and tell us, maybe you know, Selena, if like there are better copies on the DVDs. Buffy, because I would consider watching that instead of Netflix at this point, because it's to the point where I'm still frustrated and I'm expecting the show to improve, and it's not.
I have the DVDs, and I can't honestly recall. I can check, but I feel like the Netflix versions are bad. Like, when it was season one, it was understandable, because that is a very low-quality season, but the rest, maybe it's just because it's so dark, so you see the grain more. So I don't know. Anyway,
Angel's dark, too. That's why I was saying that show is very beautiful, the way it's shot. I think its tones, its colors, they're beautiful. And I think the show lacks all of that. I think it is not pretty at all.
Well, that's kind of to my point, is that I think this season is, you're going to feel like it's a lot prettier. Because I agree. I feel like in that was kind of my point with season three. There was a lot inside the dark high school. There was a lot inside the dark library. There was a lot of stuff like, in season four, they start to use exterior shots a lot better. You get a lot more stuff in daylight. It's just a lighter feel. But so anyway, speaking of something that is going on in Buffy season four that's pretty awesome, is that Harmony is back. Surprise!
She didn't die.
She's a vampire. She did.
She pulled the Lavender Brown, and it was like, oh no, I'm bitten. I wonder if that was her moment of transformation, if that vampire took her aside and was like, I bit you, now let's turn you.
I don't know.
They state that vampire. Like, Xander comes in and rescues her at that point, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, we saw her get bit. And I think we see her, like, we don't see her after she got bit in the season three finale. So, but now she's back. I want to know what you guys thought of her in this episode, and if you thought that this was the kind of character that the show would pick back up.
I have never missed Drew more than I do.
Oh, really?
Right at this moment. Harmony was back, and I was like, oh, this will be great. I think her and Spike will like vibe together. The longer that she stayed, I was like, where's Drew? Please dump whatever fungus eating monster you found and come back, because I could stand Drew for 100 more hours, and Harmony just drove me crazy.
Wow, that's interesting.
Which I wasn't expecting. I was so excited to see her back. And I was like, oh, this is great. She's like having a lot of fun as a vampire. But like by the end of the episode, I was like, oh, God, she's got to go. She's got to go. I was kind of angry that she was like wearing the ring when Spike had the spike.
So you felt like Spike in this episode.
Oh, my God.
Basically.
I related to Spike so much when they were like, you know, digging through all the stuff. I was like, yes, Spike, just kill her, please.
Right. Right. Well, I will say I love Harmony. I think she's hilarious. And I think she's sort of, again, I love when characters come back from previous seasons and they take on a role you wouldn't expect. And Harmony is such a good example of that. And I think, to be honest, like, for me, she is probably one of my favorite sort of, I don't even want to call her a side character. I want to call her like a fifth theory. I don't even know how far down you have to get to where she is. But like that kind of character that has a surprise return and has a new role to play in the story. I think she's definitely one of my favorites. So I'm very, very happy to see her. And I think her annoying things are hilarious.
I get kind of annoyed by them, like, in the way I think the show wants me to.
Yeah. Well, that's what I like. Funny. I like that I get annoying.
I find it to take away the oomph that her character used to have, because she used to be...
Did she even have anything before?
I think she did, because I'm thinking it's not from any action she did. For me, it was always just the impression she gave off, when we're in Wishverse and she's talking to Cordelia, she's so matter of fact about like everyone's dead. Like she felt to me like a character that in the face of an adverse situation, she would do well. And she wouldn't be as much of a victim as she was here. Because when she's in not Wishverse vampire world, but when she's in, this vampire world of real Buffyverse, she's really just like Spike's plaything victim. She knows that he's trying to murder her, And she tries to come back at it with an interesting defense mechanism of using her sexuality, which is like, I mean, that's very much overplayed. It's very much a trope in media that women use their sexuality to protect themselves from an abusive man. That's sad to see. I don't like seeing that personally, just as, you know, a person that likes seeing people like Harmony that I also like do well. And I think she's doing horrible. And I think she's stuck here. And I think maybe I'm actually second guessing myself. I feel like maybe Spike was her sire because maybe
he wasn't.
Okay. Well, anyways, he definitely picked her up because he wanted to get back at the crew, the Scoobs. So that was an interesting plot point that it was a good way of writing it back in. I'll give you that much, that they chose Harmony of all people. They've kind of built it up from that season 3 finale when she's bitten. I like that was a nice way to tie in the plot. But in terms of what they did with Harmony's character, I do not appreciate anything they're doing with her. And she doesn't seem as stupid as to say, I want to go to France again. Like, she feels like to me she would have survived better in that situation, and she wouldn't have said that the last time that got him so angry.
Okay. Well, I will say, like, just because it's always interesting to sort of pick up like the first time reactions to characters. I will say I think Harmony is probably was set up to be that stupid. Like, she if you remember sort of lines like Cordelia standing up to when Cordelia starts dating Xander, the gang, her former Cordette gang kind of regroups. Right. And you sort of have those moments of seeing Harmony sort of be not the leader exactly, but try to be, and Cordelia sort of very scornful of her. She calls her a sheep. You know, you have those moments of Cordelia just being, Harmony being totally clueless. And we definitely get the sense she's a follower. Like, she is the definition of a follower, and an airhead is pretty much what she was as a human. She definitely was not like smart or brave or anything like that. So I think what they're doing, taking those traits and putting them on a vampire has interesting results, but definitely an interesting impression that you got of her.
Yeah, I think it also then what you were saying brings up an interesting point that we keep talking about, that line that Angel kind of like floated over about, you know, like the soul, like, you know who you are as a human and what you are as a vampire. And Harmony was so empty as a human that when she's a vampire, she has nothing except that trip to France. It's sort of like, that's the thing that I'm going to focus on because I have nothing else to bring to my character, kind of deal. Because when I was a human, I didn't know who I was or, you know, what I wanted. I just did what everybody else was doing. And she probably saw someone go to France and have a great time. So she's like, well, that's what I want to do. I want someone to take me to France. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Tell it's sad for her when she has to, like, attack Willow. She doesn't want to, but she does it because her master's telling her to. And of course she has that animalistic thing of like, I want blood. But I feel like she would have attacked anyone else but Willow if she had her choice, because she's starting to talk to her normally. She's like, you know, even the point where Willow's like, you haven't changed much since graduation. She goes, actually, I have. You can tell she's dejected about that point, but then she lets her animalistic nature take over. And that's where I started to see Harmony, I think, as we're meant to in this whole episode, as a tragic character.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think she definitely, that end shot of the three women sort of walking away from each other kind of goes to that point. But
which could have been seen as being really cheesy, but I actually liked it.
I loved it. let's talk about Spike, who is another character that sort of makes his quote unquote glorious return. So we last saw him in, I think, the middle of season 3 in Lover's Walk, obviously the whole Willow Xander thing. And what do you guys think of him coming back in this way and sort of trying his luck in Sunnydale, dumped by Drew again, and trying to find his Ring of Amara and actually succeeding in finding it?
I mean, I was happy to have him back. I was kind of bummed that I accidentally watched 3 full minutes of Angel before realizing that I had to go watch Buffy first. So when I turned on Buffy, I'm like, oh, well, Spike's coming somehow. I don't know when or where. I thought it was really impressive that he still is able to come back to Sunnydale with some henchmen and, like, you know, figure out a plan to get some other magical object. And I wasn't sure what this ring would do. I'm like, why would he risk everything to come back here? And I feel like there's some other pull with him and Sunnydale. And I mean, Sunnydale is where the Hellmouth is, so I guess random objects from the 10th century just end up here because America is so popular from the 10th century. And you know, just getting Spike back to Sunnydale, I thought this was a really clever way to get him here and show some connection to, you know, Angel, and getting him involved in, like, this project where he is sort of back in charge of a little, even if it's only like 2 people, but just having these people work under him and him just being like, I need to get in and get out. And then, you know, still not really having a master plan. I feel like he's just like, I want this ring, and then what, he's just gonna like troll the boardwalks for ladies? Like, I'm not sure.
He wants to, I mean, you said that he's brought back to Sunnydale because of the Hellmouth, but I think it's just as much about Buffy, about the Slayer. You know, we know he's killed 2 Slayers. He's kind of obsessed with killing Slayers, I think. And that's kind of, that was the be all end all of his plan, is that he can finally go after Buffy.
I thought he just wanted to get in and get out and not worry about
maybe, yeah.
And Buffy sort of got in his way in that moment, but he did seem really pumped to, you know, attack Buffy in the sunlight. So
why aren't there more vampires that use guns? That just doesn't make sense.
Then the show would
be
boring.
It would be very boring. And it's weird that they introduced it, because they introduced that concept so early. It's almost kind of like in The Walking Dead, they introduced the concept that you can put zombie guts all over you and you're invincible. They introduced that really early on in the series, and then it was like, why are we not doing this more often?
Why don't witches and wizards use guns? Because they already have a built-in weapon that sort of works for them, you know?
That's like totally...
You could,
like,
ask that about anything. People,
like, vampires don't have as much of, like... they don't have, like, a magical one-hit kill power. They can punch you a whole bunch. But if you're the Slayer, like, it just made sense for Darla to just come in guns a-blazing. That was
but
cool.
It's, like, it's the hunt, though. Like, it's so, like, that's kind of... It's part of the... When you're a vampire, like, you don't just want to kill people. You want to hunt them and feed on them and bite them, and that instinct, I think it's an instinct to bite and kill, not just to kill people, you know. It's like a different sort of instinct that they have,
at least like a knife or something. Like, it just felt like Spike came here like,
well, they have weapons sometimes.
Like, I'm in the daylight and I'm cool. Like, I can do this now. But
isn't that so Spike, though? Like, would Spike really be Spike if he came in with some kind of unfair advantage? Like, I feel like he wants to. Well, he has the ring, right? But that now he's like on even playing ground with Buffy, and he wants to take her down with his bare hands, basically.
Just to say he did. So, like, yeah, he can have a situation and say, the third Slayer killed with my own hands.
Yeah. But no, I mean, you're definitely right. But I think the end result was sort of that amazing fight scene in the light, which is so weird seeing Angel and Spike in the light in these episodes. So and a third character I guess we see come back in this episode is Anya. This really is the character, the episode of unexpected reunions. So she's back. What do you guys think? Were you expecting it? Did you kind of know she was going to be around?
I didn't know that she was going to be around, but I'm kind of glad that she is, because it gives Xander something to deal with, you know. Like, I feel like Xander, while he is still working on finding his place in the group, and, you know, he doesn't have any special powers or anything, but he's very much committed to being a part of Buffy's life and helping. Now we saw him helping Giles, which I thought was fantastic, and, you know, all this other stuff. This just gives him one more link to that world. And it's messy and it's complicated and it's going to take a lot of work on his part. So I'm excited to see if they do stick around together and Anya maybe becomes part of the group a little bit. And she, like, you know, like we saw with Angel, learns a bit more about herself as this form that she's currently stuck in. And then Xander can sort of, you know, calm down a bit. And like feel like he's doing something.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thought for her, because I think, and as you guys know, like, I feel like we talk about Xander a lot, and I think for me, I'm coming at it from the perspective where I just think he has one of the best, most realistic arcs of a TV character in general. And I think this development is I really like it, because it's nice for him to, as you said, to have something like this to deal with and to sort of be forced to not be so egocentric in his outlook, because here's this person who demands his attention and who demands his emotional availability. And you see him in this episode not really being able to deal with that. And I think if it hadn't been Anya, maybe it could have been Cordelia too, but I don't think he would have been able to come back from it. And I think he needs her to be this forceful and forward and these things that she was. And I think it was great. I think it was really funny too. He was standing there and like with the juice thing, a really funny scene.
Oh yeah. That was a cute shot. And it's in the intro sequence now for his character mm-hmm. shots. And I like that. It's cute.
So Ariana has a question in the doc that says, what made you more uncomfortable? Anya and Xander's sexcapade or Buffy and Parker's? I think I just had a hunch that Buffy was about to get burned so bad. Oh, so she saw it. She kind of saw it coming. I don't know. I didn't really get uncomfortable by any of them. I think the Anya and Xander thing, you know, you can, I like how confused Xander is by it all and how completely unable he is to handle it, and how Anya tries but fails epically at establishing a relationship between them. What do you guys think?
I think that I kind of saw not the end result of Buffy and Parker's relationship, but just the inevitability of them, mm-hmm. you know, getting together. So I wasn't that uncomfortable, just because, like, you know, I knew, kind of felt that they were going to get together by mid-episode, I guess. But Anya and Xander, I think her forwardness, like, threw me for a loop for a bit, and Xander sort of said the line, like, you know, oh, still a little bit more romantic than Faith or something along those lines. And I think that was just, it really spoke to, like, how Xander, like, wants all this stuff, but he's, like, once it's, like, about to happen, he's like, ah, you know, I don't know. And mm-hmm. he gets, like, he, like, retreats, like, you know, he, like, kind of flounders a bit. And so I think that that was a little bit more uncomfortable to watch, because I don't think Xander wanted to do anything, even though, like, you know, he's a young guy and, like, that's apparently mm-hmm. all they think about and all that stuff. But, like, you know, once he's faced with it, he's sort of, like, you know, he is a more emotionally overwhelmed him a little person. Bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that that one made me much more uncomfortable than Buffy and Parker, because we knew what Parker wanted. We kind of felt that Buffy was, like, hinting towards this and, like, was okay with it in that moment. So I think it was definitely more Xander and Anya.
Yeah, yeah. I think if anything made me uncomfortable in this episode, it was the Spike and Harmony stuff.
Oh,
just
gosh,
because sometimes,
yeah.
like, and him staking her as well. Like, I feel like sometimes I have to remind myself that Spike is an evil vampire. You know, like, as funny as he is, I always get duped. And then when he does, like, an evil vampire thing, I'm like, oh, Spike.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, no, that's a great point, and something I definitely felt throughout the episode. I'm like, Spike, like, I always, when I think of Spike before any, like, he's on screen or anything, I always just instantly go back to that moment where he's on Buffy's side for that, like, brief period of time, where he's, like, in the house chilling with Joyce and stuff like that, and I'm like, that's Spike, he's so cute and funny, and I like having him around, but then I'm like, oh, right, he's actually horrible, and we shouldn't be rooting for him.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But that's one of the, I think that's one of the things that makes Spike such a compelling character, is that he genuinely, you know, does have those moments. Like, he's evil, but he's not unreasonable in his evilness, but he's still evil. So it's like, it's always a balance with him. But yeah, no, that was the only thing. What do you think, Mitch?
Well, it confuses me too, because he's also like, hey, Buffy, I'm on your side because I don't want to actually destroy the world. I just want to play mm-hmm. around with the idea. And I don't get that. I still am confused by him doing that. I'm still confused by him teaming up with Buffy.
Well, again, it's because he's not,
we don't yet know.
Right, right. And that could definitely be true. But I think it's also just in that case, it is just him being pragmatic and generally being smart. Like we talked about at the time, like he sees beyond the, I'm so evil, I want to destroy the world. He sees, like, okay, but then we're all going to be living in hell, so maybe that's not such a good idea.
Well, it's just like, where did he get to that point where he switched back to being Buffy needs to die? Because he was just on her side twice, even if it was like a forced situation.
It didn't have anything to do with Buffy. I think it really was just about being like, okay, well, Angelus, he hated Angelus too, because he took Drew away and kind of reduced him to the, like, what's he called? Like a beta male, you know, he wasn't the alpha anymore. And that sort of made him really mad. And it was like the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of situation.
Very true. I think he's still trying to get revenge. It's probably him acting of the love lost of Drew that he wants to kill Buffy because he's still upset because he thinks that Angel had a lot to do with him and Drew breaking up, which I guess he did, as Angelus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But Buffy is still the Slayer that needs to die because she's the Slayer and he wants to kill a third Slayer, and she's antagonized him enough that he wants to beat her. You know, whereas with Angel, what we see in the next episode, which we're going to be getting into talking about in just a bit, he wants to hurt him. You know, he wants to torture him. He wants, like, it's very personal for him. Whereas with Buffy, it's probably more like enemy, like arch enemy kind of situation. It's still personal, but it's cleaner, I think. What else is there to talk about in this episode? I mean, Oz said he was heading off to LA with his band to hand over the rings. That sort of set up the crossover very nicely.
And okay, I'm changing sets for the week. I'm not going to be too important in this episode because I have a lot more to film in the other set.
Yeah, I have a whole page of dialogue in total. It's great.
Yeah, he actually has words that he is saying. He's not just thinking.
Exactly. I think great episode all around. Really sort of solid return of Spike and Anya and Harmony, and a great setup for the episode we're going to be talking about next, which is obviously In the Dark. But before we get into that, just our favorite scenes for this episode. And Mitch, what did you have?
Mine was Spike drilling away at the earth. He's all sweaty and rugged and dirty. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be aesthetically pleasing.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's also a thing that is confusing about Spike, is that he can be very attractive.
Yeah, that's tough.
When he wants to be. Yeah.
I know. Or even when he doesn't want to be. Even when he's just being, you know, a hardworking blue-collar, you know, drilling man.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of people that are very attractive and British, Brittany?
Giles. He has a TV, and I thought that was fantastic reveal, because everyone's like, they're going through books and stuff, and then Xander's sort of like pushing it away, and Giles is like trying to backpedal like why he has a TV. He's like, oh, well, you know, it's not like I don't watch, I thought that whole like scene was just so great.
And Willow is so disappointed.
Yeah. I'm like, let him have a TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode was actually written by Jane Espenson again. Shout out to Jane one more time. But
she has an associative producer or something. So yeah, she has like a higher up.
She's a producer this season, yeah. And I think she does those group scenes really, really well. And that was definitely a fun one. And Oz sort of admiring Giles's records and just all that kind of stuff was great. My favorite scene was the party scene with Buffy and Parker and Spike and Harmony. Because I thought that them running into each other is just really funny and really, really well done. I love the moment between Buffy and Spike in that moment. And I love when they leave and Parker's like ex-boyfriend and she laughs for like 5 minutes. I think that's just so funny. I do not like the part where Buffy and Parker are like talking and making out, because I actually think they are pretty gross. Like, I don't like them. But yeah, that was mine. And for favorite lines, Mitch, what do you have?
Mine is when Willow is learning that Buffy and Parker slept together, and she sees something that I can relate to that I've said to friends before. Well, in details, I mean, not details, I don't need a diagram, but, you know, like maybe a blurry watercolor.
Yeah. Willow, you know, comfortable, like college Willow is just the best Willow. I think she's so amazing.
But still adorable, still quippy.
So adorable, yeah.
She hasn't lost her character path in her way of getting to this confidence. I like that.
Yeah, she's really just evolved. You know, she's really just found herself, which is so rewarding to see. She is, yeah. She's so inspiring. It's so nice to see her all confident. And Brittany, what was your favorite line?
Mine, as much as I talked down Harmony, this line made me laugh out loud. It's when she's sitting in bed and they're like reading news. Spike's reading the newspaper and Harmony's like, is Antonio Banderas a vampire? And Spike's like, no. oh, can I make him a vampire? And then he sort of like thinks about it and he just wants to get rid of her. And he's like, yeah, sure. Actually, that's a great idea. You should do that. But it made me think, like, could celebrities actually like be vampires if they were like, you know, they use the sewers to get to set, or they just walked under umbrellas, you know? I feel like this opens up a whole new world for me to think about, like, who's a vampire in this universe, because they're right near L.A. They could just be, you know, acting and then, you know, killing people at night.
And, you know, I didn't get the reference to Interview with a Vampire until you picked this as your favorite line. And I read it and I was like, there's something about this. Why'd they choose that actor? Oh.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that'll come up on Angel, since he's over there and he's an actor now. So
yeah, he's an actor.
Yeah. Keanu Reeves is for sure a vampire anyway. So we already know that. But yeah, no, and mine was just when Parker sort of intrudes on Buffy's scar when they have that conversation. He brings, you know, unintentionally brings up Angel, and he asks how she got the scar, and she just goes, "Angry puppy." And I feel like if that does not sum up Angel in two words, then I don't know what does.
So that's also a very good reference to Wishverse when Willow treats him as a puppy.
Oh yeah, she called him as a puppy. Yeah, that's right. Angel just is a puppy. Wow.
I still wonder if some characters are going to start remembering some Wishverse stuff.
Well, they didn't actually experience it.
I know, but like if something of like tiny wimey wibbly wobbly stuff is going to start happening with that, because this made me feel like it was.
Well, when the Doctor arrives in season 6, then that'll be what happens. Yeah, and the Winchesters roll into town.
Sorry, if I see a TARDIS, I am out.
That's fair. But yeah, no, so great lines, great episodes. And now for the equivalent, which is, or the follow-up, which is Angel, episode 3, In the Dark. And Ariana's synopsis is, in this episode, Oz visits L.A. to bring Angel a pretty ring from Buffy, but Angel has resolved to be miserable forever, so he hides it in the sewers instead. Meanwhile, Spike is back, and he's got a pedophile doing his dirty work. The pedo tortures Angel and then steals the ring, so Cordy has to coordinate Oz into busting through the warehouse at the most opportune moment to save their dark night. They end up at the beach and battle under a pier, and Angel watches the sunset, but then destroys the ring anyway, because we learned in the last episode that he actually enjoys sitting alone in the darkness like a budding serial killer. So there you have it. That is In the Dark. Well, I guess first of all, just what did you guys think about this, the crossover, the two-part story that went across both shows?
I think that Angel in this episode in particular, I did enjoy the fact that there was the crossover and that the ring was sort of the thing linking them. It wasn't so much, I mean, Oz was there to transport it and stuff like that, but it wasn't character based. It was more like item based, like, so they're,
and
not
Spike based,
and yeah, and Spike based, so like, but they but Spike wasn't like, you know, chasing Buffy who went to Angel. Like, it was this object that he was after, so that made a little bit more sense. Like, you know, it wasn't so much like, oh, remember that these two shows are connected. It was sort of like they don't need Angel and Buffy together to make the crossovers work, so I really liked seeing that. But I did think that the way that Buffy handled the Spike storyline, I liked a lot more than the way that Angel did, until they got Angel, like, you know, Angel and Spike in that, like, torture situation. Only because I feel like they were dealing with so many issues in one episode. It was like, oh, Angel's still trying to, like, you know, figure out this, like, you know, abusive relationship, but then we're also dealing with a pedophile, but then we're also dealing with torture, but then we also have Spike trying to get a ring, and then where is Oz? Is he at band rehearsal? Like, I felt like I was losing track of so many things, and then there's Cordelia and everyone. Like, it was so much going on in Angel that I felt like they could have stripped it down a little bit. Like, they probably didn't need Angel, like, taking care of that other case this week. Like, I feel like that could have been held or something. But I mean, I enjoyed the crossover a lot. And once we got into the crux of Angel and Spike together again, I thought that that was where it was the strongest.
You know, it's so funny that you say that about there being so many storylines, because it's something that I think is sort of already apparent in Angel that I've always found really interesting, is that I find that I feel like Angel episodes are a lot longer than Buffy episodes because they deal with more things. Like, Buffy, one of the things that I love about Buffy, not to say anything about Angels, it's a different type of show, but one of the things that I love about Buffy is that it's so main character centric. You know, like everything comes down to the main characters always. And when you sort of have your Monster of the Week episodes, like the monster is always directly related to one or more of the main characters. So it always ends up being about them anyway. Whereas an Angel,
like Twinkie eating mummy.
Exactly. It was all about Xander. Right. And so, and the robot thing was all about Willow, and it's always them dealing with the demons. And, but Angel maybe is a little bit more like victim of the week, if that makes sense. Like it has that slightly more procedural edge, which means that while you have Angel dealing with Spike, you always have that random woman dealing with her ex-boyfriend, and you always have that cop woman dealing with her thing, and you have all these different non-crucial characters going through stories, and that's fine if you like that kind of thing. But I think that sort of, to me, is a lot to get through in an episode of Angel. So I enjoy some parts of it, and other parts I'm like,
yeah, that's a really good point, because I think we kept almost trying to call Buffy, well, like the newbies, at least maybe I did, trying to call Buffy a sort of procedural in the beginning, like Monster of the Week, but it is definitely more character-based. Each of those Monster of the Week really brought out something about a character. It always came back to, like you were saying, the central characters of the show. But Angel is, like, definition procedural. Like, it is like Angel and Cordelia, they're going to bring in people, like, you know, every week that they're going to have to help. And there may be some people that they help where they appear more than once because they get in trouble. Even the transitions are very CBS jarring. Cop drama because, like, they have they remind me of like NCIS, where they take a picture and like that's the picture that fades into like the commercial break.
Or I was just saying that last week. Yes, yeah, I'm so glad it's very that separately for me.
Yeah, it's very like it's very procedural feeling, and even though they're not a, like, you know, a cop operation, they are a quasi agency, and they are actively looking for people's cases to take on. It's not so much a monster.
Things are not happening to them. Yes, they're happening to other people.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And look, I love Angel. So it's like, it's not like a thing. It's just, it shows how the characters or the shows are different, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things that really struck out in this episode, I know it's only episode 3, so I mean, but I think
the format is there.
Yeah. But I think it feels like we've spent time with Angel so much that I'm already like quick to saying things that I don't want to see, even though it's only episode 3. But like, I don't want, this is maybe more of a prediction, I guess, than a criticism. Like, things that I don't want to see are just like every week it being like an abused woman. Cause I feel like even though we had a demon in the episode, like it was last week, like where it took the form of different, like, you know, sexes, it wasn't like, you know, predominantly male or predominantly female. I feel like they're looking for, they kept going up to like women and being like, oh, are you being like, are you in need of help? Are you in, like, and that kind of like rubbed me the wrong way. And starting off another episode with an abusive relationship where the woman's the victim, I'm like, Buffy did such a great job of, like, you know, really not harping on like the women always being in trouble or the men always being in trouble. It's like it felt very balanced, and I felt like we're not striking that balance yet in Angel. But this is a crossover, we've only had 2 other episodes, so there's so much Angel to go, but it's already something that I'm like actively paying attention to.
And it's funny you say that, because Ariana mentioned in the doc too, and I noticed it too. There are so many blonde women in need of rescue so far on this show. And it's so funny because Buffy comes in and basically subverts the trope of blonde women needing rescue and founds its whole show on reversing gender roles all the time. Then comes this and like reverses it back. And it's like, what is happening? But I will say, you know, keep watching for sure, because it's just a few episodes, but I definitely noticed it too. And I'm like, oh, what is happening? Like, oh, is this just going to be another, but it's not, don't worry. But it definitely feels a little bit backward, you know?
Yeah. And like, the blonde thing could easily be attributed to like, we need those lingering feelings for Buffy. These are the cases that Vera is drawn to right now. And then as we move on, that could be like, that's clear, like, you know, that could be something he moves on from too. but also like LA in the 90s and like 2000s, like people were dyeing their hair blonde to get roles, I guess. So
yeah,
it also kind of makes
they
sense.
All auditioned for Buffy.
Exactly. They're like, we have all these leftover people who auditioned for Buffy roles. Let's like put them in Angel.
Yeah, they already used 5 of them in Buffy, so maybe that is just the rest of them. They threw them on Angel. But yeah,
including Charisma Carpenter, who's
still
being
Amy.
Used today in the, mm-hmm. Angel. But yeah. At least she's not a blonde. At least she's not a blonde.
I know. That would be bad, wouldn't it?
Torture stuff.
But yeah, no. Yeah, but just...
Way too much for this genre. This felt like... Okay. Like, Vampire Diaries gets there, and I'm like, okay, I think you kind of ran off the advancement of, like, Supernatural and whatnot to get to this darker place. But Buffy and Angel do not feel like the kind of show that can get to this place, but they did, and it was shocking to me. The shock value was extreme when he's throwing, like, hot pokers through his body, and, like, they didn't really hold back from, like, showing it actually happening. It was intense. This was, like, some crazy shit to be showing on a TV-14 show, if you ask me.
I mean, I don't think it's worse than last week. Last week was, like, spectacularly gross, but they definitely upped the torture factor here, and it actually reminds me a little bit of Alias. I don't know if you guys remember that show. It was on a couple of years after.
That would also be a good rewatchable show, I'm often told.
So good.
I'll stay spoiler-free on it now, but I think that you're right that last week was gross, but it wasn't as gross as this episode, because that was, like... man versus creature. This is man versus man, and that feels even more disturbing, because it's like, how dark can human nature go, or vampire nature go, against another human being? That's always worse to me than like when Wentworth Miller turns into like a gross like alien swamp monster thing. Sure, that transformation was nasty, but it wasn't like he was having a giant metal javelin thrown through his chest.
Mm-hmm. Well, Angel is darker. I mean, when we say that, we don't just mean because it happens at night, you know, like Angel is like...
Which didn't have to. They solved it, okay? Seriously, they had to make this episode, guys. That is so ridiculous. Know. They had it. They had the solution to their show, because they can't just say sewers for everything. Bad shit will happen during the day. Angel will have to go places during the day. And he still does. He goes places during the day. And it makes me so upset that they threw away this ring. It could have explained everything. I would have forgiven all the past discrepancies I've had with science in this show. Ugh.
Okay, well, I think that's fair. But they do kind of explain why it happens at the end. Like, Angel does explain to Doyle why he isn't giving himself the ring. And I think more so than because they have cops during the day. I think it's also just because I think, you know, when you go back to the whole thing about Angel being cursed and having to live with suffering, I think in general, like, he doesn't want to get too complacent, he doesn't want to get too happy, he doesn't want to get too relaxed, he doesn't want to feel too much like a person, because we all know what happens when he feels too much like a person, you know, when they say perfect happiness, that they don't actually mean he has to have sex, they mean he has to feel the happiness that goes along with it, right? So I think it's just a case of him wanting to preserve his purpose, and if he takes on this ring, he loses that purpose. What is he, you know, what can he do, what can he be if he can't be this protector, you know, of the night?
Be normal, just like he always wants. He
but
doesn't
I
want
think, don't think he
special.
Wants to be normal. I don't think he wants to give it up. I think, like, the whole torture thing, I think he feels like he has a lot to atone for, and I think this is his way of forcing himself to keep atoning for it.
But that wasn't Jealous. It wasn't Angel. Totally a separate person.
No, I know. But he feels
well, in terms
like
of, like, Angel.
Him.
Yeah, that's where I'm upset at Angel, not you. Mm. I'm saying that I wish Angel would realize that already.
Right,
really,
yeah, I know.
It gets tiring. It's exhausting to see a character like Bucky in the Winter Soldier just go on and on about, oh, God, I need redemption for what I've done. It's like you were under, like, mind control, essentially, here, Angel, just like Bucky was. So just let it go, whatever. You can't control what you're doing if you're underneath, like, a magic roofie spell of vampirism.
That is true. I'm with you. I always hate when characters take on blame for stuff that isn't their fault.
Well, that's tough because that's the whole premise of Angel. So I'm trying to follow it, but I'm getting to the point where I'm so exhausted by it. And the fact that he destroys this ring makes me even more exhausted by it, that I'm just ready for Angelus to come back and, like, rip someone's throat out and just call it a day. Whatever.
Listen. You don't have to tell me twice that you're excited for Angelus to come back, because I've been asking since he went away, when is he coming back?
Are you excited that one episode when the fate came back?
Oh, yeah, but it's still... It wasn't enough. It wasn't real. But I think, like, your point about how he wanted to get rid of the ring. I think it's really when he's in the sunlight and like he's like, you know, feeling like that just warmth about him, and that little girl is like on the beach looking at him. It's sort of like I was uncomfortable. I'm like, no, I don't think I like this. Like I think that Angel in the Light is too easy. Like, yes, it could solve problems and he could get over himself and do all that, but I think that him having the ring would change what they're trying to do with the show. And like, you know, there's not going to be like lovable little monsters who left Buffy, you know, and ran out into the sea. They're not going to come back, you know, and just like randomly be like, hey, Angel, saw you're on the beach. Let's fight right here. And I think it sort of keeps the balance of the world in check too, because sure, some like crazy, crazy things happen like on the Hellmouth and like in Sunnydale, but it's sort of like accepted there. Like, you know, the people who are there understand like, yeah, some like, you know, we all almost die every other day. But in LA, I feel like it's not like no one's like, oh, you know, never know when I'm going to run into a vampire. I like that there's that secrecy of trying to keep the world still separate. Whereas in Sunnydale, we sort of just accept it. Like, you know, the people who are going to get groceries, if they see a giant monster, they're still going to like go to school the next day. It's not going to change the universe so much, where I feel like in LA, it's more of like a secret society, sort of like how when Angel's going looking for Spike, there are all these like key people that he can, you know, count on who know the secrets of the world. And I think that that's going to really push Angel forward in the storytelling perspective. Like, you know, oh, who in the daylight knows about what happens in the night, and how does that, you know, affect Cordelia or Doyle, who can go to these people?
Yeah. Like he literally runs into a cop. You know, who's trying to do her job. And it does kind of that. Yeah, I agree. I think the point of having them be confronted with this issue of the Daylight Ring, as they call it in the Vampire Diaries, sorry, is just to show that Angel is doing this by choice. You know, it's sort of taking away the thought that he's doing this because he can't do anything else. And it's giving him more of an active role in his own story. And it's saying, well, Angel's actually had the chance to turn away from this mission, but he chose to take it upon himself. Unlike Buffy, who is obviously the Slayer because she has to be, Angel is this investigator because he wants to.
Because he's not the hero Gotham needs, but it's the one he deserves, or something.
Exactly, exactly. He takes it on not because he has a destiny to it, but because he feels that it is the thing he needs to do. And I just think I agree with you, Mitch. I definitely agree with the whole and Bucky parallel was great, but I think it's sort of a nice way of setting him up in this like first stretch of episodes as him being a quote unquote Avenger by choice. The Dark Avenger, and I think it's maybe it'll help him be more active and stop brooding so much. But knowing Angel, probably not. We will have to see. So anyway, anything else to say about Spike's role? Did you like seeing him interact with some of the other characters? Did you like the fun / darkness he brought to it all?
I really enjoyed their interactions, because I think at the beginning of the episode and even like the end of the other couple of episodes that we've seen of Angel so far, he doesn't really like have he never really had a personality, but you know, he does have somewhere deep inside that very dry sense of humor. And it wasn't until this is kind of like encroaching on my favorite scene, but like it wasn't until they were fighting and like getting into it and like, you know, he was with a familiar foe that he was like, you know, that side of him came out, and he got almost like, even though he's fighting someone, he got comfortable, I think. And it was like that moment where I was like, right, Angel is like an okay character when he is comfortable. So like when he's like in the groove of working with, you know, Giles and Buffy, he was tolerable. It's when he's alone and brooding and doesn't have a purpose and all that stuff that he kind of really gets on my nerves the most. And I think that seeing him with Spike and giving him this role of like, you know, kind of like almost an awakening in Angel, like I feel like this episode did a great job of like bringing Angel back to life a little bit and like finally able to move on with his story and like branch out and like be wittier and drier and, you know, not as, I don't want to say annoying because most people don't find him annoying, but annoying to me. So
yeah, I know what you mean. More melodramatic and sort of, yeah, you know, and I think, and that's sort of what's so great about it too, is that it really shows, and I think you guys will really enjoy that, it shows the line between Angel and Angel's blurring a little bit, because obviously we saw Spike and Angelus together a lot in season two, and the same dynamic is kind of coming here. So you're kind of thinking, okay, well, how much of Angelus's personality is because he's Angelus, and how much of it is because of the situations he's in and the kind of person that he has to be around these people, you know, now that he's not in this love thing with Buffy, he's more, as you said, he's more free to be the way he would be. And maybe he takes more from Angelus than we've seen before, which would be interesting.
It would be fantastic. Like his relationship. He doesn't have to go completely dark, but, you know, he was funny and, like, you know, he just had more of a personality. And, like, you know, we don't really get to see that with Angel, like you were just saying. And I think that now that he is, like, set and he's like, okay, this is what I'm doing. I am now in this moment choosing to associate myself with Doyle and Cordelia. We have this thing going for us. This is what we're doing. I don't have this other option to go into the light and, like, deal with, you know, another sort of hurdle to overcome. I know, like, you know, that he had that fight with Spike and it, like, just, it brought back a little bit of that spark that he's like, I know what I'm fighting against and who I'm trying to not become, but I can still, like, you know, remember what I was when I was with Spike. And, you know, that's coming out a little bit.
Definitely. So the villain, how do you guys feel about that? Talk about your dark turn. Like, that villain with the pedophile villain. Oh my God. The actor, first of all, is so great at being creepy. But I also, what I like about it too, and I'd be interested to know what you guys think, but it also puts Spike's evilness into perspective again. You know, it's kind of like we were talking about for Harsh Light of Day, how Spike is not that he's not evil, it's just that he's not the same kind of sadistic as some other vampires are, like Angelus and like this guy. So I really enjoy that. I enjoy seeing the different types of evil that exist in this world. And I don't want to say I like how dark this particular evil is, but I like seeing, it's sort of a good taste of what Angel is willing to do on its show. So what did you guys think?
Super creepy. I was uncomfortable from that actor's performance, which means he's doing a good job.
Oh yeah.
Like, I don't think there's ever a moment where I'm like, oh, a pedophile on television, that's not creepy.
Well, that's true. but no, I do. I think it was well done, and it was definitely meant to be unsettling, and you'll see more of that as the show goes on. No, go on.
I was going to say, I think that, like, you know, you were saying, like, you don't want to say that you like him, but he did such a great job as that particular character, to where, like, you did want to see how far he was willing to go and what he was going to do next. And then to, you know, kind of realize that he was the one who took the ring, and then have everyone sort of, you know, the thought click into place, like, he's going for kids after this. Yeah. Like, it was like, oh, like, there is a huge sense of urgency right now that we need to get deal with. And just watching Spike watch him work and getting frustrated with the music, and Spike is the, like, so dramatic, but he doesn't appreciate someone, like, making a point of their drama. Like, why are you playing this music? Like, it doesn't add anything to the moment, but you could tell it does because it's agitating him. So it's like a sense of torture, like, that he's just, like, not into the flashiness of it. And I think that kind of even was something that he had with Drew. It's just like get to the point. He's always, like, in a little bit of a rush. Like, he doesn't like people's flair for things. He just wants answers, and he wants to watch the pain happen immediately.
Like the anointed one too.
So
it's too much drama. That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. I like that. And I guess finally, I just wanted to ask you guys, something I don't know if you have been discussing on previous episodes, but what do you think about the dynamic that's going on between Cordelia and Doyle in particular, but also with Angel? Angel and Doyle, Angel and Cordelia, is that kind of gelling for you? It's closer to Cardelia. Oops.
I am definitely liking Cordelia and Doyle more and more, just because we're over that initial, like, oh, I want to bang her type of thing. It's still there, but it's not like... Yeah, it's still there, but it's not as, like, in your face now. And I think that they vibe really well together because it's someone for her to push against. And he's still, like, you know, just crazy. And there's this all this history with, like, his character that we don't know yet. And I think that that's a great mystery. But also Angel and Doyle, that last scene, I think, was the first time I finally felt them click. Because, yeah, they have, like, this camaraderie, like, oh, I'm a demon, you're an angel with a soul, we get along great. But it's, like, an odd couple thing. But then at that end there, it was like, oh, but this is, like, a friendship. They're not, like, you know, when he was just like, by the way, how is your mom? Like,
I literally like that line.
It was, like, really cute. And, like, you know, you have him sort of explaining, like, no, this is what I need to do, even though, like, you know, I'm crushing this ring. And Doyle's like, my life would have been so much easier if you didn't crush that ring. And I just think they have a great camaraderie. And like I was saying earlier, I think this episode did a great job of sort of like pushing Angel on its like trajectory. So we're not like waiting around for like, oh, how is this going to link back to Buffy or what, it like, you know, beyond character things. I think that they were really smart to get it over with in episode 3 of both series, because then it's like, oh, I'm not waiting. And now I feel like this show can start, because it's a little bit of like closure. That ring, like, literally linked him back to Buffy because she sent it to him. And now it's like, okay, good. Crushing that means, like, Angel can go their way, Buffy can go their way, and we can meet up whenever.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, you know, and again, going back to sort of the differences between Angel and Buffy, I think Angel is so, so strong when it's about the core dynamic of the characters. Like, they, you know, I don't know if I've talked about, I guess I haven't because it would have been a spoiler, but bringing Cordelia onto Angel was the smartest decision that anyone has ever made on television. Like, I stand by it, damn it. It adds something so good to the dynamic between these characters and the thing that was like sort of the friendship thing, business relationship, whatever that's going on between Cordelia and Angel, like you kind of already saw it on Buffy, the two scenes they had together. I think Ariana and you guys were like, oh my God, that's so cool. They should have more scenes together. And having them on the same show now, it's so cool. And Doyle, I really love Doyle. I think he's a very nice character to have on a show like this too. And I'm into it too. I really like it. I love the scenes that we have with them.
We talked about it this kind of in length, and we were going on, Adriana and I, and saying that we know Doyle's going to be evil eventually because they're playing it off to be that way, and we think he's a neutral evil. So it's tough for me to go anywhere past that because... like a neutral evil in that he's forced to be evil because he's trying to protect someone or something or the greater good or something, kind of like Dumbledore. Ish.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's where I'm still fitting with him. And this episode didn't really do anything but affirm that for me, because it feels like he wanted Angel to be like his ultimate soldier for something, and that's why he wanted him to keep the ring.
Okay.
And in terms of what he's doing with Cordelia, Doyle and Cordelia, I don't know, it's tough to ship him. It feels like Xander part 2, because he's really being gross toward her again, and I'm just like, I've seen enough of this.
Yeah. No, that's a valid perspective, too. It's an interesting theory. We'll have to see how that pans out. So moving into our favorite scenes for this episode, I will start because I have the first scene of the episode, which is also one of my favorite scenes in general, which is Spike narrating Angel's savior moment, standing on top of the building and looking down, him saving that blonde woman. And he finishes it off with, quickly, to the Angel Mobile, away! Spike, when he's funny, he's just the best. I love it so much. I thought it was hilarious.
Which, before we move on from that blonde girl, I have to say that they're obviously pointing toward the fact that Faith is in the show, because Angel goes, have a little faith.
Oh, yeah.
And then she's like, what? He's like, just have some faith. She's like, okay. Well, and then she gets a phone. She gives him a phone call later. And it's really just like, I don't know who it was. Like, Doyle or Cordelia took the phone call message and they said, Hey, Angel, we have a message for you. We're told that she found Faith. And I was like, yeah, okay. So Faith's coming back on the show.
Well, I mean, I didn't notice that, too.
It's right there in the context, Selena. There's no denying it.
Well, I will say that in fear of being too spoilery, I'm pretty sure they were not referring to the actual Faith character in that exchange. But, I mean, I definitely picked up on it as well, and I thought it was really funny. You can't just use that word now.
Like, I thought that was just straight up Faith is on the show next week.
Well, that could also be true.
That
would definitely make that line a little bit less awkward if that was the case.
It was so awkward.
Yeah,
it was so weird. It was just like, and the network execs told us to throw in this line so that we can bring in Elizabeth Bishkush again in the next episode. That's fine.
Yeah, probably. And what was your favorite scene, Mitch?
Mine is when Oz's van crashes through the torture chamber because he's holding two crossbows. He looks really awesome. He says, "Spike," and then they all escape.
Yeah, that was a cool Oz moment.
That van is very characteristic of Oz. I do like it. It's where he saw Willow in her hot Britney Spears costume on Halloween that one year.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's fun.
Brittany, do you want to say anything else about yours?
No, just happy that, you know, Spike and Angel got back together and fought each other.
There you go. Yeah. Another popular ship. My favorite line was, speaking of Oz, as we were before, he doesn't have a lot to do in this episode, but what he does is pretty great. Like, he has a nice little catch up with Cordelia that kind of establishes exactly how much she is emotionally connected to the group back in Sunnydale, which is not very much. And then he has an exchange with Angel, which is just perfect, where Angel goes, "Oz, Angel, nice surprise. Thanks. Staying along? Few days." And then Doyle asks, "Are they always like this?" And Oz says, "No, we're usually laconic." And I had to look up that word because I didn't know what it meant. But yeah, no, I love it. And I think it's so funny because I know you guys were talking about how Oz should come on Angel, but I think this kind of proves why that wouldn't work, because they are very similar in this, like, their dry sense of humor is very similar, so it would be probably too much of a good thing to have too many of those exchanges going on the show. But who knows? Mitch, what was yours?
Favorite lines are when Spike says, "Cordelia, you look smashing. Did you lose weight?" And she gets caught off guard for a second and goes, "Yeah, there's this really great gym. Hey!"
It was cute. And Brittany?
Mine was when Angel was being tortured and he still, like, had his wits about him. And, creepy torture man Marcus says, "What do you want, Angel?" And he just keeps asking Angel that over and over again. And Angel says, when one time he says, "A house in the country, a pair of good running shoes that you can also wear out to dinner."
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like he kind of starts off with, like, you know, you think he could be serious. And then, no, there's that wit we like so much.
Yeah. So those were the two episodes of Buffy and Angel. We hope that you guys listening enjoyed our discussion. And we're going to move into talking about some of the things that you have to say. And if you want to leave your spoiler-free thoughts on Buffy and Angel and what you think of the show so far, you can do that by emailing rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet re_watchable. You can find this post on hypable.com, and you can find us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And for iTunes reviews, if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will frolic with you on the beach under the Santa Monica Pier amidst rippling waves. That is wonderful, guys. Head on over to iTunes right now and make it happen. And listener feedback, we're going to start with Twitter, and Brittany and Mitch, do you just want to go down the list?
Yeah,
sure.
So our first one is from Emmy Foss at Emmy Classic, who said, "I was going to be good and rewatch season 4 along with you, but I've already skipped 402 and is afraid this is going to be a theme. I'm still holding on with Angel, though. I'm finding I am enjoying it more than last time." Well, I hope that you only skip the Buffy episodes that aren't crossover episodes. So, yeah. I mean, if you've already seen season 4, go ahead and skip it. I mean, from what I've heard, a lot of people don't like season 4. But maybe stick around for the crossover episodes.
Yeah, we talked about this on Twitter too. I will say skipping 402. Like, I don't want anyone to skip anything, but skipping 402, I can understand because that episode is the worst. I'm sorry if you guys like it. I just not like it. I hated Kathy. I'm so glad she's gone. But and I understand. I totally understand. But I will say there's some. When I rewatch it, I always find these little things, these little exchanges between characters. Like, I think there was one in 402, like Buffy and Oz go on patrol together, and like that never happens. So stuff like that is just cute, you know, if you want to
do a full rewatch. But the episodes know what they're doing because I think they just had to get rid of that roommate. So they're like, we have to have an episode where we get rid of her, but let's give the audience something a little special just so they make it through.
I think so, too. Yeah. Yeah, no, and there's definitely, there's a plan to everything, to the weirdest of weird stuff. So, so yeah. And what does Mandy have to say, Mitch?
Mandy K at Mandy K said, Natalie trying to explain Angel without spoilers is amazing. I feel like the newbies are either so right or so, so wrong with their theories. Love it. Also, the new outro music is perfect.
Yay! I know you guys don't like the Angel theme. I love the Angel theme. I hope it grows on you.
I'm fine with it. I'm not one of those newbies that doesn't like it as much because I think everyone else hates it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. It's very different for sure. I have a big problem with the Angel theme tune actually because I listened to another Buffy podcast called Potential Cast. So shout out to them. And when they started doing Angel, one of the guys did a song to the theme song where he made words, and it's so good and so bad. And I hear it every time I hear the theme song, and I actually really like the music, but now all I hear is like him singing that song. And yeah, so he ruined that for me forever, but it's okay because it's really funny. So, and for our hypeable comments, we have one from Brittany Koza who says, I gotta say, as a super fan, the newbie theories about Angel give me life, especially about Doyle, so keep them coming. Speaking of Doyle, Natalie was right. They created Doyle when they couldn't get Whistler due to schedule conflicts. Yeah, I'm glad that Natalie brought this up. I am so glad that they got Doyle instead of Whistler because Whistler was so boring to me. Like, I couldn't
imagine. He's probably preparing for his seminal role of Ruin on Gilmore Girls, if we had to be honest.
Oh, that's true. That is. I keep forgetting that's the same one. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's like, I hadn't seen him in anything else before Buffy, so I just thought it was really boring.
House of Black on Hypeable said, very happy you're using the Angel theme as the outro music. It's perfect. I know, because it's a downer, and it means that we're done with the podcast.
Yeah.
And they go on to say, I was surprised that so many disliked the Buffy episode. I thought it was very funny. I couldn't stand Perky Kathy and sympathized with Buffy. I disagree that Oz would fit on Angel's show as his shtick is deadpan, and Angel is already the master of deadpan. No pun intended. Very funny. In the Angel episode, I didn't like that Cordy was given a ditz moment at the computer. If she was accepted at so many great colleges, she'd know her way around a keyboard. I hope they don't write her as comic relief idiot girl as the show goes on. I agree. Cordy's better than that moment.
Yeah. It's so funny, though, because in season one of Buffy, there was this episode moment when Cordy also couldn't figure out the computer. And Willow, like, in a vindictive act, made her delete the whole thing.
Yeah, so I think computers are still relatively, like, new-ish. Like, not new, but, like, you know, not everyone was using them still.
Mm. But that's a really good point. That's a really good point. And, you know, also House of Black's, the other part of his comment, I think that, I think Buffy just knew instinctively that Kathy was evil. Like, I always assumed that was the reason why she, you know, her Slayer instincts kicked in. So, I don't know. And Mitch, what about Sarah's comment?
Sarah wrote in that it's torture to listen to all the newbie theories and what might happen in the future on both shows. I'm just sitting in my room, waving my hands in the air, looking around wildly as if there's someone in my empty apartment who I can talk spoilers with. Guys, it's so painful, but the payoff is so good.
I understand that. It's hard.
Melissa says, this rewatchable episode was hilarious, guys. I was laughing the whole way through. It made my Monday far more tolerable. Smiley face. I mean, that's what we aim to do. Just make Mondays better.
Yeah. And Mitch, do you want to get the last one from iTunes? And that ends.
A five-star iTunes review from Joyd's titled, smart and funny podcast. One of the best things about this podcast is the rotating cast of hosts who do the podcast. It's nice to get different views and opinions every time I listen to a podcast. Sometimes I will hear one of them say something that I disagree with, and as I'm mentally preparing my reply, another host ends up saying what I wanted to say in my reply. I love that. Rewatching along with the podcast has made me think about the shows differently and has made me find out about things that I missed the first time around. The chemistry and camaraderie between the hosts is apparent and makes for an entertaining hour of rewatch awesomeness, or 2 hours when Mitch is on. Thanks. Maybe that's a good thing. They put a smiley face at the end. I'm not sure.
I think that is a good thing. That's awesome. And thank you so much to everyone who left comments, and we hope to hear from you again in future episodes. And now for Mitch's musings. So coming up on Buffy and Angel are Fear Itself and I Fall to Pieces. So tell me, tell us what you think.
Lion King's the first thing that comes to mind.
Lion King.
Why laugh in the face of danger and fear itself. It's what I think of whenever I hear that term, fear itself. I feel like we're going to have someone being really brave. Gonna go through an elephant grave. I have no clue. I really don't. Okay. Like, I'd not even throw at the wall here. Maybe it's like, okay. No, we already had like a nightmare episode, so maybe this is gonna be something similar. Maybe the nightmare monster is gonna come back and it's gonna be like, what's your worst fear, not your nightmare? And it'll be everyone's thing. Like, I guess Xander kind of already had his clown thing and Willow had her stage fright thing. But like, I wanna see like spiders and like heights and that kind of stuff. But then someone's not afraid of anything but fear. Maybe that's what could happen. Brittany, what are your Brittany brainstorms here?
Well, I think, doesn't the title of this one have a comma in it?
I think so.
Yeah, so I think it's like, I don't think you're too far off. I think fear is going to like become a thing that they're going to have to deal with because, you know, it's like fear itself. So it's like, you know, fear is going to be embodied in some way and they're going to have to fight fear or be taken over by fear.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah, it could be something like...
Or
yeah,
they're going to adapt The Lion King. I don't know.
Or that.
I just feel like there's something Lion King-y about the term fear itself for me always, because it just felt like, I don't know, maybe it's not really related, but it just feels like that. Maybe it's like so Shakespearean. Maybe that's where I'm getting that. Anyways, Angel 104, I Fall to Pieces. It just sounds like another one of those like really lame like Evanescence cover songs that someone would make a music video on YouTube for Angel about. So I can imagine it's going to be just as dramatic, and it's going to probably like the monster of the week could be something about maybe like someone. I mean, when I think of Fall to Pieces, I think of like the Tron pixels and like someone falling apart in terms of like blocks. That's the only thing. I don't know how else we could get this. Or if someone gets sliced up a lot by like a Freddy Krueger kind of creature or something. I don't know.
Sounds good. Those are some good musings this week. Obviously, a lot of us are going to be at Comic-Con next week, so it'll be another short show or short. No, I should say small panel, not necessarily a short show. But it's going to be very good.
Mitch is still on. Don't worry.
It's going to be 2 hours. Don't worry. But I'm looking forward to hearing about it. I Fear Itself is I really love it. It usually makes its way into my top 15, 10, maybe 10, maybe 15. I don't really know. But it's definitely one of the ones I like a lot in terms of, you know, the character stuff. So yeah. And I Fall to Pieces. I can't really remember that one. So I think I do. I do remember that one. Okay. Well,
Buffy. Hey,
I'm falling to pieces. I don't know.
When a heart breaks, no, it don't break even.
Even. Yeah, yeah.
Angel, what is he supposed to do?
When he can't go out in the daylight. Okay.
You dumbass, he destroyed the ring that he could do that with. Anyways.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we'll still be.
They're going to come in handy later. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's why they had to destroy it, so it wouldn't be a question mark hovering over the show.
Like, you had to destroy the Philosopher's Stone, didn't you, J.K. Rowling? Yeah, exactly. We see you.
There you go. There's your comparison of the week.
There's our comparison of the week.
Death Joe. It was a Horcrux all along. Well, that was the end of the episode. So, I guess to wrap us up and get out of here, my name is Selena.
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye. Do 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 do.